Welcome to Inside the World Economic Forum. I'm Michelle Mishler. We are already halfway through our annual meeting 2012, and so far, participants discussed the Eurozone crisis, moving towards freedom between Palestine and Israel, the Arab Spring, and global food security. In today's edition, we'll hear from some more participants. We speak with a professor from the London School of Business and a social entrepreneur who says business and social responsibility have to go hand in hand. But first, some impressions from day two.
My name is Aziz Apsu. I'm coming from Istanbul. I think it's my 19th time now here. So it's getting crowded every time. But it's a great organization. I enjoy every session I go inside. And I'm looking up for the next one, which is going to be in 10 minutes. It's refreshing, by the way. We hear so many new things which you don't get in your daily life. And it's kind of getting more energy to do the things you would like to do and seeing people who really do it. And so it's motivating.
My name is Wana Udabang. I am a global shaper from the Lagos Nigeria Hub. And I think the forum has just been fascinating, especially with the incorporation of younger people and just, you know, wanting to see a different vision of the world that is inclusive as well and diverse. So I think that's been really amazing. Hearing, being to all the different sessions and hearing just diverse groups of people from different intellectual areas, political areas, philosophical areas of life as well, coming together and all about one vision of moving forward and, you know, change for the world.
Hi, I'm Neil Gershenfeld. I direct the Center for Bits and Atoms at MIT. We do research at the boundary of computer science and physical science. It's working up in 20 years from now to make the Star Trek replicator, something that makes anything by assembling the atoms. As offshoot from that, we started setting up community fab labs. This is about $100,000 in equipment that lets you create modern technology. Historically, it follows the parallel from mainframes to mini computers to PCs. Mini computers are when the internet was invented and things like that. And the fab labs are like that stage. It's not the final technology, but it lets you create technology. So they spread around the world, doubling every year, north, south, east, west, rural, urban. People are using them to create businesses, to do education, to provide aid, to create infrastructure. And for the first time this year, we set up a fab lab right here in the forum in the Congress Center on the terrace. And it's been great fun running it. There have been all sorts of comments about never doing something like this. The forum is compelling sessions, interesting conversation, but actually getting to see stuff like this in action, people have been so excited. Coming in, there was a concern about programming. What is the message? How do you tell it? But what's happening is just people show up full of questions, do projects, and we've been racing to keep up. It's been great fun.
My name is Felipe Larraín. I'm the finance minister of Chile. And actually, this is my 10th Davos. I've been coming here before as a faculty fellow of the World Economic Forum. Now I come as a government official. I've always found that this is a place where you can analyze things in depth, get a close feel about what the key players in academics, in government, in culture, in NGOs, are, and in business, are thinking. It's really not, you know, this kind of presentations that you get in PowerPoint, which are very extensive, but, you know, this talk and exchange of ideas, which happens in the panels. I like that format, and I like the ideas. And today, for example, although we are, as emerging markets and in Latin America, we are in, you know, reasonably good shape, we are concerned about what's happening in Europe, and this is a unique opportunity, a unique place to get that kind of analysis.
My name is Sue Alcock. I teach archaeology at Brown University. It's my first time at Davos, and I have to admit, when I first walked in, I was absolutely terrified. I thought, I know five people in this crowd of 2,000. I am going to be sitting alone in a corner the entire time, feeling pitiful. And I've actually had a variety of extremely informative and even more, you know, just friendly conversations with people who then turn out to be incredibly famous and frightening and terrible. And, you know, Davos breaks the boundaries.
Linda Grattan is a professor at the London School of Business, and she tells us what it takes to be a good leader.
Well, you know, I mean, leadership is about followership. It's about, are people prepared to follow you? But what's happening right now is some of the challenges that the world are facing means that our ideas about leadership are changing very, very rapidly. It's a great time, by the way, to be a young person who wants to be a leader, because I think there's going to be massive opportunities for leadership in the coming decades. I mean, we're seeing, you know, a whole set of factors coming together. I mean, clearly globalization means that leaders now have to think in a global way. Technology means that they're connected and their followers are connected. At the same time, Gen Y, the millennials, seem to want to work for businesses that are more connected to society, that are more able to solve some of these big global problems. And so we see real changes happening in leadership right now. Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that this combination of globalization, technology, big issues like child poverty, environmental challenges, means that a leader now has to work in this multi-stakeholder environment. I mean, I've just come out of a panel with Jasmine Whitbread, who runs Save the Children, and she was just talking about how important it is for leaders to be able to connect to NGOs, to connect to governments, to connect to large companies, and that managing in a multi-stakeholder environment is very challenging. And frankly, we really haven't taught leaders yet how to do that. For me, leadership is the capacity to obviously engage and inspire, but also the capacity to have a sense of purpose that embodies some of the challenges that the world is facing. I don't think leadership is just about, you know, making 15% profit on capital employed. I think it's much more than that. Leaders have tended to be men. And, you know, if you take a look at organizational charts, then 50% of graduates are women, 30% of managers are women, 10 to 15% of leaders are women. And that's very problematic. And I think that's a huge lost opportunity in terms of human capital. And of course, there are people around the world who are trying to do something about that. I believe it's a very important challenge. And organizations that are capable of increasing those ratios are basically tapping into this incredible human capital. So let's hope that that happens. In terms of the human capital aspect of the gender gap, you know, the simple truth is that if you exclude 50% of your of intelligent, interesting, knowledgeable people from your the top of your organization simply because they're women, that's just an extraordinary loss of talent. And actually, if you look at Japan right now, that's generally been very poor at bringing women through. We see that in Japan right now, that actually part of the demise of Japanese industry, I believe, is because they haven't really been able to engage all of that talent in their organizations. It's very, very crucial. Norway, of course, has made a big stand in terms of legislation. I personally, this is a personal point of view, are keen on legislation, but many women aren't. But nevertheless, I think we have 10 years to do something about this problem, to close the gender gap. I think for some women, the idea of legislation makes them feel that it's tokenism, that, you know, I'm only there because I was meant to be there. I mean, for example, at Davos this year, I know you've said that, you know, one in five has got to be a woman. Well, if you're the woman who comes, you can't help thinking, oh, I'm only here because of my gender. And I think people rightly feel uncomfortable about that. I mean, when I became a professor at London Business School, I was the first woman to become a professor. And of course, you know, I knew that there was a lot of energy around to appoint a female professor, and I happened to be there. But I feel that our generation of women have to be prepared to put up with that, because we have to think about the next generation. And the next generation should have gender parity. We didn't. They should. The Global Leadership Fellows Program is absolutely incredible. Why? Well, there's an amazing group of people. I know, I've taught them. I can tell you that. It's an incredible group of people. They get to understand the World Economic Forum. I mean, that in a sense is the institution. That's where they're taught. And it seems to me that building stakeholder agreement across multiple groups, which is what the WEF is about, is just an incredible opportunity to do that. You meet people from many different countries. You learn what real stakeholder management is about. And in my view, that's one of the key attributes for leading in the future.
And now Jose Ignacio Hernandez, a social entrepreneur, says business and social consciousness no longer need to be mutually exclusive.
Okay, I have many institutions. One is Un Kilo Ayuda. We work on nutrition, trying to shift traditional nutrition from focusing on getting height, on achieving height on children, to really achieving brightness on children, to really have as an outcome what is cognitive skills and emotional skills on children. Then I work also in a supply chain called Mi Tienda. At the moment we have 7,000 stores in rural villages with less than 3,000 inhabitants each village. So then microfinance is another institution I participate in, which is called Compartamos. At the moment we're serving 2.5 million clients with loans, and also in microinsurance. And then another institution is health. We have clinics and hospitals serving over 300,000 people each year. And then another is education. We're trying to change public policy in Mexico in education, because we're one of the last countries in OECD countries in education. And then also I'm in impact investment. We have launched a fund out of an organization called PSM. It's a private organization, and all we do is try to help social entrepreneurs by doing impact investment. In the past 2 years, we have invested over $100 million helping social entrepreneurs. Well, I think that the main role that we must do is to try to have social entrepreneurs come into the mainstream of investment and the mainstream of industry also. I think we have a lot of projects with a social vision to include the unincluded at the moment, which is the bottom of the pyramid. And what we have to do as a community, and all, of course, fostered by the Schwab Foundation, is to try to bring all these projects into the mainstream of businesses, of investors, in the next 20 years. Well, business and social companies, they have to bond in together. If not, we will not be able to scale.
And that's it for today's podcast. Join us again tomorrow for more out of the annual meeting 2012 in Davos.